What up, doc suckers?
Oh, that's so strong, Joe.
This is Word Salad Radio presents Doc and Roll. I'm your host, Joe Ketchum, and I'm joined today by John Stahl.
Hey!
How's it going, John?
Oh, boy, we're in for a real ride on this one.
We are. Oh, boy. I've been meaning to watch Tickled for a long time, and I didn't know much about it. Because I think all my knowledge was like, someone says you should watch Tickled, it's about tickling tournaments, but I'm not going to say anything else, and you shouldn't. You shouldn't say anything else.
You should just watch Tickled. Need to leave this, and you should stop this right now. And it's free in a bunch of places, and you should watch this thing. It is a freaking ride.
Yeah, it's on Prime. It's on Tubi for free. I think it's on HBO, maybe, if you have HBO.
It's not. I looked for it in Max. I didn't see it there.
Because it's like Crackle. An HBO documentary.
I looked it up. It wasn't in there when I looked.
But it is free. I think at least Tubi has it for free with ads.
I watched it, I think, on Tubi.
But it's on Prime. I watched it on Prime without ads.
Oof. Oh, man.
So please, watch it before you listen to us talk about it, because it is the craziest fucking thing. It's so wild and amazing.
And when you first sent it to me, you know, like, we need to watch this. I was like, sure, I'll watch. Oh, all right. And I immediately, like, took a screenshot and sent it to Joe, and I was like, dude, if you just want to watch some gay porn, we can get on Zoom and do it. We don't have to trick me into it.
I sometimes have to trick people into watching porn for podcasts, as I did to Johnny Blaze for an episode of Dick Fix. I'm still way proud of that. Johnny has not returned to the podcast, but I know we're on good terms.
Oh, boy.
Well, that's not true. He did a fic off. He has done a fic off. Yeah.
He's due for another one.
He's coming up for another one very soon after this comes out.
I'm excited. Oh, we can do plug and recommendation early here.
Fic off live coming fic October off 1st. Live, baby.
The Halloween fic off.
Yeah. A very spooky fic off.
Yes.
We got to talk about Tickled.
Oh, how do you even start? Well, okay, wait. So, Joe, would you, for $4,000?
Absolutely.
A hotel. Oh, you didn't even wait. You didn't even wait, like, to find out what it was. $4,000, like, you were in.
Okay, I guess you can finish. I assume you're going to offer me the deal that these kids get.
Yes.
To tickle each other.
That's where it starts, is this guy David Ferrier. He's in New Zealand, and his job is weird news, right? That's his thing. His beat is weird news.
Yeah, and they show some, like, clips of his other stories as we lead into the proper narrative of Tickled, where he's, like, interviewing Bieber, and he's talking to, like, this Comic-Con guy that's, like, in full, I don't even know, Klingon.
It looked like he was a member of GWAR, actually.
Okay, yeah. But that guy cracked me up, because Ferrier's like, I don't think I've ever talked to anyone who looks like you, and he goes, oh, really?
like he was
he's legitimately surprised by that.
Yeah, he's like in this, like, heavy zombie makeup. Have you ever seen GWAR? It looks like he looked like a guy from GWAR.
It was pretty intense.
Yeah, and so then, yeah, he stumbles through this Facebook group on this offer for competitive tickling.
Competitive endurance tickling.
Yeah. It lasts over an hour, and if you're willing to participate and go through a screening process, they'll pay you $4,000, set you up in a hotel, and you can compete in the international endurance tickling competition.
Yeah.
I mean, my interest was piqued.
I mean, I would absolutely do it just for the experience. And, you know, it's rough because I am super ticklish.
Oh, you would be perfect for this then.
Like, super ticklish. Like, when Amanda tickles me, after a minute of me begging her to stop, I want to punch her. so being tied down and tickled for,
oh, that's
like,
the other part
for
of
like
we
an
didn't,
hour.
We didn't say that. You were also tied to a bed or a big pillow thing.
Yeah, at least for, like, the quote-unquote professional competitions, it seemed like they were pretty consistently strapped down.
Yeah, and that's the video that we start with by seeing the competitive tickling, is these, I'll say they were beautiful men? Barely.
Barely men, yes. Maybe of, like, age.
Boy band beautiful.
Yeah, they looked like One Direction, for sure.
Oh yeah, that beautiful hair, that just gorgeous, and one of them is laying down with another one on his chest. The one who's laying down has his arms above his head bound and his feet bound. And I'm like, this is just bondage. I mean, it's very obviously very S&M oriented. While this guy just starts tickling him, and then two other people tickling feet and ribs. So it's a 3-on-1 tickle bang.
And my
tickle bukkake, if you will.
My mind didn't immediately go to like gay erotica.
Oh, it was obvious. I saw that. I was like,
it's there for sure. But I wanted to believe it was an actual sport, because it's not a bad idea for a sport to like see how long you can be tickled for money. It's like, that's as good a thing as any to train for and get good at and get sponsorship for, I think.
It seems like some dark utopian, or no, dark dystopian. I don't know, whatever one you want to be.
Yeah, dystopian.
Dystopian. You know, if I was going to watch like Idiocracy or something, that would be one of the shows people would be watching.
Baiting. Get out of here. Baiting. I'm baiting.
Ow, my balls. We're watching tickling and ow, my balls. And then I'm baiting.
Oh, and of course, the Academy Award winning Ass the Movie.
It won 8 Oscars that year.
I love Idiocracy.
Oh, it's some of the language is a little dated. I watched it recently.
Sure, yeah.
But it holds up overall.
As social commentary, it just gets more and more relevant.
Unfortunately, it does. But in Tickled, when I watched this, my mind went immediately to that. This is bondage, and this is a kind of, like, it's not hitting, but it's definitely designed to be uncomfortable, and the person who is being tickled is not enjoying it, and I didn't see any safe words, so I don't think it was a very healthy.
Yeah, there's no mention at any point of a safe word. Like, even the guy who makes Tickled videos in Florida completely independently, I assume he seems like a decent guy. I assume he has safe words. Like, if his subjects can't take it or they need a break, they have safe words. But it seems like a really good opportunity to torture someone.
That's what it is.
And never let them go. And just like, hey, we're paying you for this. And just, I don't know. I don't know what happens if you're tickled too much, if you like can pass out or something. But
oh, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think our protagonist, our antagonist would know on this.
Maybe if he were alive still. We'll get to that.
Spoilers.
Too.
Yeah. Spoilers. So David, he's as, I mean, amused by this as us. And so what? He emails the Jane O'Brien Media, the people putting this on, and, you know, a day or two goes by, nothing. He's like, okay, whatever. And then all hell breaks loose. And that's where our story really begins.
Because it's so crazy because, you know, he just wants to write a story. He wants to, like, I'm really interested in this sport, this tickling sport. I'd like to do a piece about it if I can interview
someone.
One
weird one-off. He just wants to do this weird one-off, like, this seems odd. Just tell me about this.
And Jane O'Brien fires back with all this homophobic, we don't want a homosexual living with a man. We've Googled you, and we do not support your lifestyle. And he's like, this is so absurd. He's like, this seems really gay. I'm really surprised.
It was way off the rails for what was.
It was
like
so
even appropriate
over the top.
Response.
Yeah,
yeah.
It wasn't just like, no, thank you, we're not interested. It was like, screw you, faggot. It was like,
right.
it was insane how they go to 11 right away.
Immediately, and he's. He's just like more intrigued since this was just the weirdest thing.
If they had just said no, thank you, he probably would have like written a little story based on what he could find online, and that would have been the end of it.
It would have been absolutely it, and it would have been like, ah, that's weird, and then it would have gone
just this
away.
Weird thing, it would have gone away. But because of their insane response, he's like, well, now I'm going to make a whole film about
this. And it wasn't
this.
Just one letter. It wasn't like it was a one time thing. They kept the Jane O'Brien Media kept on it. This person.
They kept harassing him, and they started lawsuits like right away.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like threatening legal action, and that if he did a story on this, it would be harassment, and he would be, you know, sued in U.S. courts. And he's just like, what the heck is this about? And it's just like, okay, there seems to be like, when you told me it wasn't, you know, when I watched this, I was like, this kind of gay. And then you told me it wasn't gay. Now I think it's extra gay. Because that's what that was seemed to be the thing in the letters that he kept getting was like, you're trying to make this seem like it's a gay sport, and it's not. This is a serious.
It's only for heterosexual competitors. Yeah.
Yes, it's a heterosexual sport between
exclusively
young men.
Heterosexual. Yeah.
Yes, it was bananas of the homophobia in it, and it, yeah, we're you know they talk about sometimes. Somebody who's gay and trying to repress it will come up with this just bizarre homophobia that everything they see it everywhere because, you know, it's they're trying to escape themselves. That's what this felt like. Just dialed to 11.
And the lawyer they use to threaten legal action apparently achieved some notoriety in Canada for like defending this. What do they call him? Like Canadian psycho. Who cut up somebody and mailed the pieces to the cops or like something out of a bad movie.
Yep.
It was wild.
I don't even know. Maybe it was because he had a presence. I don't know why the lawyer was chosen. And so, of course, they're kind of, you know, this David and his is a little scared, right? That's crazy to get back.
I mean, it's scary to be threatened with legal action.
Yeah.
I don't
especially
care who you are. Yeah.
With the expense of, you know, how much a lawyer would cost. And he's in New Zealand.
Yeah.
So he's already like, what? And so he enlists his friend to help him figure out who is this Jane O'Brien Media? Who owns this? And they do some internet sleuthing. And it comes back with a bunch of shell corporations. And as they
dig
around a
little
bit.
They're all tickling related.
Like, all tickling. All and everywhere.
Like 300 domains registered to this one company. All tickle related.
Yep. So it seems that almost the entire volume of professional tickling is all this. This person, one group is putting out everything related to this professional tickling. So he's even more intrigued now. And one of the big plot points that, you know, in a documentary, it's kind of hard to pin down linearity as they try to make the storyline linear, is they get a hold of the files out of one of the servers. Apparently, when they changed hosts, one of the Jane O'Brien Media changed server hosts, they didn't put security on some of their files. So they literally just vacuumed up a whole bunch of really sensitive information that kind of comes back later. And I was wondering how much they knew early on and didn't know early on. And so it's kind of hard to piece together some of that. But
which is the name of the game on a documentary is like, you know, you're filming, but of course there's going to be gaps. So what do you voice over? What do you try to shoot and fake
right.
or recreate? Yeah.
Or how do you lay down this very complicated narrative into this kind of single format, right? They, you know, jumping backwards and forwards is not really what this documentary did. They just kind of lay it out as a single journey that these filmmakers go on. And so I think they raised some Kickstarter money. That's not part of the documentary, but it's they put together a Kickstarter and they raised $30,000 to go to the U.S. to film Tickled, to go to the studio, to go find the people and to talk about it. But before they leave New Zealand, oh, it gets crazy even before they get out of New Zealand.
Yeah, because Jane O'Brien Media sends three representatives. I don't even get the idea that they're lawyers. They're just like work for Jane O'Brien. It's like go to New Zealand first class and meet with these guys and scare the living shit out of them.
Yes, right out of the gate. So he's like, he's getting threatened with legal action again in the U.S.
Yeah.
And then he gets three representatives are coming down to talk to you. And he's like, what? And so he goes to the airport and he waits for them because it's a pretty small airport. They're, I don't remember what city in New Zealand they filmed out of or where they were.
I think it might have been Auckland.
Auckland, yeah. New Zealand's not a
no,
heavily
New Zealand's
populated
real
country.
Small, yeah.
So it was a very small airport. So they just camped out in the airport all day waiting for these people to come. And they did. They showed up and they had signs for them and they came out and they were cordial until they figured out they were being filmed.
Yeah,
and
the first guy was great. I don't remember his name. He was a real sweetheart and he was real blown away by them coming to meet him at the airport and the sign. And then the 12-year-old kid with them.
Yeah, the other guy.
I'd rather you not film me without asking. It's like, oh, we got permission. You know, it's
well,
it's
yeah, the guy was a bulldog, just goes off on them. You can't film. You know, I didn't consent to that. And he's like, hey, New Zealand, it's open. If you're in public, you can be filmed.
That fuckwad's name is Kevin Clark. I did write down his name.
Oof, that guy's a
he pops up throughout the movie, and he's just garbage. He's a terrible person right away. And he's like immediately threatening him, is like, hey, if you don't respect me, this is not going to go the way you want it to go.
It's like, you're in real trouble. You got to quit this now or you're going down.
Yeah, just these empty threats. Like, they're all empty threats.
But it's hard to know that from, he's getting legal action.
Yeah.
You feel how, and then he takes him outside. They do some under camera or undercover audio capture, and he's really threatening them. And the guy who did the computer side of thing, he's like, what? You know, they're threatening him too, and that, you know, they're going to get him, and they know everything about him. They know he's a family man and they're going to ruin his life. He'll never work again, and he'll be, you know, they're going to clean him out.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, damn. You know, who is this Jane O'Brien media that has got pockets enough to send lawyer threats out of the U.S. and just fly three people first class to New Zealand to lay this message down? That's all they were there for.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're not even lawyers.
They're just heavies just gets, to come and lay down.
It just gets wilder and wilder. But this is what gets Dylan, the co-director, on board fully. He's like, these guys are fucking assholes, and I am going to pursue this story with or without you.
Yep.
And there's a moment David
was,
where David,
he was kind of scared off in it, according to the way, you know, he presented it.
David was like totally ready to back off, but like between these three and their threats against Dylan, he's like, no, I got to see it through too.
Yep. And so they go to the U.S., they fly to the U.S., and it just, the rabbit hole, the way to, I don't know how you tell the story, it just gets weirder and weirder.
It does.
As they go down this rabbit hole and trying to figure out who this Jane O'Brien is that runs this media company, and I don't even know where to go from there.
Well, one thing I wrote down from their, like, secretly recorded meeting is Kevin Clark saying, you started this fight, you mocked us, you attacked us in the airport. It's like, yeah. Okay, that was all filmed and none of that happened.
and there's that's pretty on brand for this guy. He is willing to lie for money. It's very obvious. This guy does whatever you tell him to do for money.
It's, I don't even know that I would classify it as lying technically. I feel like his reality shifts to whatever he needs it to be, and he believes it. Like, I believe he believes he was harassed in an airport, even though we watched the whole exchange on tape.
That they were shoving cameras in his faces and belittling him.
Yeah, mocking him. Like, I don't know where you're getting the mocking at all. It's like they were very cordial.
Maybe that sign, it was very gay.
It had some production value to it.
Yeah. Oh, boy. And so I think, you know, this is where I was saying it's kind of hard to figure out what they were, you know, the linearity of what they did, because they go to the U.S. and they're trying to figure out who this person is and what this competitive tickling thing is. They haven't quite even figured that out yet. And they find a bunch of people, I don't even know how, that have been connected to Jane O'Brien Media in the past.
Yeah, I think through the various domains, or maybe through the documents you mentioned, they were able to contact various people.
That's got to be what it is, because we find out that they have this treasure trove, and later on they're like, oh yeah, there's a whole bunch in here, like financial documents that they find.
Yeah.
But they don't let that on early. There's a reveal that they do.
But they must have found it early. They must have, to like contact all, like have the information for all these competitors, all of whom refuse to be interviewed, refused to talk about anything except for this guy TJ, who they finally tracked down.
And partly they tracked TJ down, they must have just Googled him, because he had been, like, I don't know, not even blackmailed, but this is the end of the blackmail, right? Where we're going to post all these tickling videos of you online, and you're going to be, your name will pop up first with tickling.
It's so strange to me, the harassment aspect of this, because how the process works is they put out a call for people to participate in these tickle videos, and like, here's the money, and we'll fly you, and here's your hotel, and great.
There was more to that. They have a fixer. That's who we get interviewed by, a guy who goes around and tries to find young men for these tickle videos, and he goes to gyms,
several,
and
like,
he goes to MMA places, and he goes to the one in, was it Los Angeles? Was that the first one they go to?
Yes.
I think that was the first place.
But I don't think we meet a recruiter for that. I assume like Kevin and Doogie Howser are
they're the later recruiters. But we meet the guy who first set up
I think I wrote down his name too. The guy who did it in like the 90s.
Yes. It's hard to tell, like you said. But yeah, we meet him, and he was a fixer, a recruiter. Dave Starr.
He's like a casting agent for these videos. Before it was like a competition. It was just like, hey, there's this woman. She likes watching guys be tickled. Are you cool with that? And all of that.
They get tickled for money. And
yeah, you get paid, and it's just for her private collection. But then the videos are released publicly just to torment the participants.
That seems to be part of it. The control aspect of this fetish is like, I can ruin your life. I at a snap of a finger can ruin your life.
But they do it without exhibiting that control. It's not like they contact TJ and is like, hey, we need you to give us money or we're going to release this video. There's nothing like that. They just do it for the spite. They just do it to hurt these people. And that's so fucked up.
It really is. And I mean, like, this one guy that they were talking about, we kind of mentioned, TJ, he took some money to do a tickle video, and he was like, whatever, you know, my family was kind of hard up for cash, so I took the $2,000 that they were offering. I'm like, well, all right.
Yeah, strapped me down, they tickled me, they videotaped it.
It was weird.
I did this interview.
Yep. You have to do a pre-tickling interview, and they ask you a bunch of questions about where are you ticklish? How long have you ever been tickled? You know, and it's you know, again, very fetishy, and so he does the video, and then they put it online. They just ruin this guy, and he was, I don't know, trying to be a professional football player, and every time he would do tryouts, he said, you know, I would get cut, and the coaches were right up front. They're like, when we Google your name, you come up first with these tickle videos.
The tickle videos alone probably wouldn't be enough to be a problem. It's like, it's a little weird that you're in these tickle videos, but Jane O'Brien Media also, like, emails prospective employers or current employers and spreads these vicious lies about him being a pedophile and, you know, I was going to say being gay. He's not gay, but they try to use it as an attack, which
exactly. Works. And which is weird because that seems to be the thing that Jane O'Brien Media fears the most, that their tickle videos will be associated with being gay, but then that's the slur they use against everybody who either, you know, speaks up a little bit or just to ruin people. It's so bizarre to me that they go to such lengths to be like, this is not a gay activity. This is a straight guys just tickling each other. And if you want to see something gay in that, that's your problem. And it's then to turn so around weird. And slander people and be like, look at this gay stuff this guy's doing.
Do you really want him around your kids? Yeah.
And it's like, what?
But the tickling seems to not even be the fetish. I mean, it's homoerotic and people are into it, but it feels like Jane O'Brien really wants to have this dirt on these kids just to blow up their lives for fun.
That's the fetish, right? That's the control aspect of it. The S&M, where it's the sadism component of S&M. And
I guess it's easier to get kids to tickle each other than it is to, like, just engage in full-on gay porn.
No, I think Jane of Jane O'Brien Meeting, we got a lot to talk about, unpack with that, is, I think this person has, their thing is control, and it is towards young men. That is definitely the fixation that we see kind of time and time again. And this person's been doing it for decades. So it's not new. And it's always the same pattern repeated. You know, it's always like the interview, the tickle video, and then the ruining of their lives.
Yeah.
And that process just repeats over and over and over again.
Even though it seems to be super easy to get people to participate. If your whole thing is just tickle videos, if someone wants to leave, it's like, great. You know, and even coming at it from like a business standpoint and like these tickle videos being marketable, I was like, you'd want fresh faces. You'd want younger actors. And you could just be upfront with like, yeah, we want to be able to put this online. It might cut into how many people are willing to do it, but I think it would still be probably pretty easy to pay teens, especially in the area she targets, to tickle each other.
Yes, for money. But this is what blew my mind. Jane O'Brien Media doesn't make any money off of the tickling videos. No income is driven by the tickling videos. It's all
that output. Yeah, that's actually a good point. They just pay out money to produce the tickling videos, but they don't seem to have any pay for tickle video sites.
There's no structure to bring in, because this is where we kind of jump to Florida, where he actually David and Dylan go interview a tickling fetishist.
Yes.
And he says, you know, I started this in the 90s and, you know, it was just me in my house and we bring somebody in and film it and tickle him. And, it, you know, he's like, it's my thing. It's my kink. And, he was able to buy a pretty nice house. And in fact, he owns two houses.
Within a year he could quit his job.
Yep. And just focus solely on these.
Just producing tickle videos. I mean, I guess it's a good game if you can get into it. I would produce tickle videos for money. I was like, it's not my kink, but.
Right. But if you could.
Money's pretty kinky.
Well, get that fans only page going, Joe. We'll all join it.
Oh, I didn't think about the
only fans
only.
Right? Yeah.
Only fans. Yeah.
You know, jump in.
They were going to crack down on porn. It's like, this isn't porn. It's just hot guys being tickled.
Right. What's wrong with that? That's not gay. I imagine
there's a whole untapped market for women being tickled as well.
I'm sure that's got to be in there. I can't imagine it's not.
I'm sure it's out there. But
you're way behind that. It's on the internet, but maybe not produced and highly, highly focused as you could do it, Joe.
Wouldn't have the. I'll probably have some storylines in my
right.
Some
production
videos.
Values, a little story. People are like, no, just get to the. I don't need 10 minutes of setup. Just give me the 5 minutes where the girl tickle on the girl till she pees.
Hey,
that's
some people like the setup. I'm just saying.
Some people
like the setup to the activity.
I like a little narrative before we jump in.
I like to know why these characters are tickling each other for sure.
Why are they tickling? What is going on here?
What do they want out of this tickle?
And I'm going to say that's not too far off what Jane O'Brien Media does either in some of these. Because there's always a premise behind the tickling. It's not just tickling for tickling's sake. The one of them was like, can MMA hold? Is tickling a valid MMA technique?
Yeah, yeah.
That was one of the premises out of Muskegon, Michigan, that she was recruiting out of to recruit these MMA fighters. They all knew it was a BS thing, and they're like, "Yeah, I would. You know, if you try to tickle a guy at an MMA fight, what?
You're gonna get punched in the nose."
Yeah, but they were like, "It's good money until you find out, you know, until they have you over a barrel and then start publishing your face everywhere and telling everybody you're a pervert." But there was
another guy who had been investigating this stuff for a while. And he was talking about how, you know, they would email college kids and they'd be like, hey, we'll give you $1,000 for a tickle video. And like, oh, yeah, sure, $1,000. And like the next day, a FedEx truck pulls up to your house and drops off an envelope and there's 10 crisp, brand new $100 bills in there. And you haven't even done anything yet. And, you know, you get gifts and all this stuff.
Gaming consoles, computers, laptops.
Everything you could want is just shipped right to you. And then as soon as you want out, then they like frame you for legitimate federal crimes.
Yes, that was the crazy one where I think the person was going by Terry DeSanto at that point, right? Is that what it was?
That's close.
DeSisto.
Yeah. DeSisto.
Then said, you know, I'm gonna use your login and do a bunch of cyber crimes
like
on your
campus.
Shut
down your college's network so that they think it's you and the fucking Secret Service email bomb the White House or something.
Yep, yep. With their personal email, school email, and then did the same, and then shut the campus down. And it happened. Oh, man. Just the vindictiveness of this person is unbelievable. Just to the lengths this person will go to ruin you and then just keep coming back.
For no reason at all. I was like, oh, they gave you all this content. I mean, you're using it illegally and they just kind of want to ignore it and have it go away. So, you know, use it illegally and most of them are not going to raise a hair because you can embarrass them and they'll just hope it doesn't turn up. But they like viciously go after these kids.
That's the thing that stands out, right? It's just the retaliation and vicious, just malevolent attacks that these people get when they want out or even if they don't want it, just happens. It just shows up on the internet at some point. When you Google your name, boom, up comes all this tickling stuff.
Yeah, because like TJ was just a one-time thing. He got his money, did his tickle video, and went on with his life. And then the video started coming up, and he's like, yeah, I'd like you to take that down. No response. YouTube, you know, they're using my image illegally. Please take it down. And then she fucking blows up his life for that.
Yep. And that seems to be the fishing, though. That seems to be like, I'm going to put it out there, and then when you find it, I'm just going to ruin you. That seems to be part of, like, the anticipation of...
Yeah, exactly. And that's
torturing, I think, these people.
Yeah, you're absolutely right that that seems to be a big part of the fetish, is just the control and the destruction.
So, like, yeah, and so they, so we were in Florida where they were talking to this legitimate fetishist, and he says,
who seemed
like
a real sweetheart. I like the guy.
And he had two houses, one just for filming the tickle videos.
Yep.
And then his own house where he lived very comfortably. And I think they get from him, because he'd been in the scene for so long, the kink is very specific, that this was one of these very small groups, and in the early 90s or the mid 90s, had heard of this person, Terry. And I was like, oh yeah, Terry Tickle. Yep, I know exactly who that is. You know, this is, you know, had been putting out this, you know, need tickling videos for years. And so that kind of, I think they gave them a lead on kind of where to look next. And that's where they end up, I think, finding Dave yeah. and the journalist. They find a couple journalists that have been kind of in this for a while.
Yeah, there was a journalist who did spend a lot of time researching Terry Tickle, and even talked to Terry a bit online through her AOL account.
Yep.
So actually did talk to her for her articles.
And then we kind of jump back to LA in the kind of story, that the narrative, and this is where we talk to David Starr.
David Starr is such a sweetheart.
It's so interesting.
He's such an ethical guy too. It's like, I like movies about sex work, and I like getting that insight into how, like, the sex industry works. So I'll watch documentaries about porn and stuff.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of those too.
And it always seems like, you know, occasionally you'll get a documentary about the seedy underbelly and, like, try to make it all look terrible. But a lot of it seems like these are just normal guys doing a job. They treat the talent really well. It seems like a really well-run business from that perspective. And this guy, his main priority is the agreement with the talents. Like, these guys are coming in, they're doing the tickle videos. It's understood that it's just for Terry's private collection. You know, whatever she wants to do with the videos is her business. And once she starts publishing it online, again, like you said, I don't even think for money. He's like, I'm out. You can't do that. That's a betrayal of everything we've agreed to. And he's just like a real ethical guy. And then, of course, she comes for him real hard.
But what's funny, what I loved about him is he didn't care. He didn't to give a crap about the mean letters. Because I think at this point it's still Terry. It's not Jane O'Brien yet. Because the names change through the years.
And there's a while there where Terry and Jane O'Brien insist they're not related to each other. And they're, like, both suing David.
Yep. And Terry is sending these really nasty handwritten letters to his mother.
Like birthday cards with like poetry in them.
About how he's a homosexual and how he's a pervert and a degenerate. And don't you wish he was dead like his brother?
Yeah, don't you wish he was dead instead of his brother, Edward? And like in verse, it was like, perhaps you wish David, not Edward, were dead. It was like, that's a reference to my dead brother, Edward. That's really messed up.
Yep. And he seemed to just kind of be like, he wasn't embarrassed by being called, you know, any derogatory names. He's like, these are just crazy. And he's got he brought out this trunk full of correspondence he'd gotten over the years. And so he'd been making these tickle videos for Terry. And he's got, you know, like, there was a time that Terry was in the hospital. He's like, and still like, hey, I'll send money in a when I get out of the hospital, just keep making the videos. And I'll be out in a little bit. Let me know. And that kind of goes on for a while. That's when, like you said, Joe, that he's out when he starts to see that stuff comes online. He's like, this is not cool. You can't do that. I'm out. But what he credits himself for was bringing production values to the tickle videos that hadn't happened before. Like an interview and then like a real stage craft that had been lacking when it was just been amateur hour before. Oof.
Because it follows a very... Because he also worked in the porn industry. And it's a very kind of familiar porn formula of, like, you get someone in, they're kind of unsuspecting, and you interview them and you kind of talk them into doing a tickle video for money, and then it, you know, gets out of hand and they do whatever you want. It's you know, it's if you're familiar with porn, you've probably seen videos like that where the talent has sex instead of just gets tickled.
And what's crazy about this is nobody's ever naked. So that's one of the things Jane O'Brien keeps bringing up, that why this isn't porn and this isn't erotic. You know, nobody's ever naked. Nobody has sex. And you're like, okay, this is purely for sexual gratification. I don't care if anybody's not naked. The end product is to satisfy one person's sexual proclivities. And it's like, whoa. And all these cycles, hundreds of videos for just apparently this one person. That's all that seems to be the market for this. This is all for one person, this whole industry.
It is. I mean, other than the guy in Florida who does it for like professional fetishists. Yeah.
And makes a good living off of it. That's what was crazy is there's no money going to Jane O'Brien Media for these videos. And clearly it's a very profitable market.
Clearly. Yeah. I mean, it's wild that it's not. I mean, and it's because Jane O'Brien Media gets its money from other places. I don't know if we want to go ahead and
dive into the big reveal part yet? Because, well, that's the mystery. We're still kind of building in the narrative the mystery of what the hell is going on. This thing doesn't seem to be made to make money. It's all over the world through hundreds of shell corporations. It seems to be controlled by one person that is hidden behind all these names and has been doing this since the 90s. What the hell? So I think it's a pretty good time to unmask our provocateur.
the man behind the curtain.
Oh, you gave it away. it wasn't Terry and Jane, and I think there was another one in there.
Yeah, there was Debbie. And Debbie. There was another
alias.
Alias Nom early on that, initially threatened David. But yeah, they because the one website is just a bunch of documents that someone accidentally dumped on the internet, and financial records, they quickly identify the person behind all this is named David D'Amato.
And so they have a name. And it takes a minute. They're like, is David really all these people? And it seems to be, yes, that all of these people are...
It's a little sleuthing because like it's the same address used in all these different companies and all these different lawsuits. And so it ties them all together through this one person and this one address.
And then we find out that he's got social security numbers for Jane and Terry.
Yeah, which belonged to dead people. Yep. Like he stole dead people's social security numbers and is using
credit cards in their names. And so they on paper were real people, but oh, so crazy. That's where it just goes off the rails at this point.
Yeah, they quickly learn that David D'Amato was an assistant principal. Which is so gross.
Oh my God. This part was disgusting. Really gross to me.
Because they say he worked at 8 different schools in 10 years, which is just like 8 red flags. There is no way any of those 10 years at those 10 schools,
or even eight schools,
ended well. Like he was fired for gross sex stuff.
Yep. Yep. And this person is a narcissist and he's a predator.
Yeah.
Everything we get about this guy, he is a sexual predator, and he definitely was. You can see it when he talks to the reporter about sending money. He's grooming people, right? He's like, you know, will you do tickle video? Here's $1,000 right now. Here's an Xbox. Here's a new computer. You know, that's these very classic grooming things, and you just know he was doing that gross stuff in the schools.
Ugh. He must have. I can't say for sure.
No, but speculation.
The 8 schools in 10 years implies like covering up and there's no record of it. But there's no way he does 8 schools in 10 years if he's not.
He's not some Danny DeVito turning around inner city schools and then moving to one to another, turning around the lives of children, right? Let's face it. That's not what was happening in those schools. That's not who this person was. And this, in some respects, this is where this documentary just left me with more questions. I wanted to know a lot about that. Like, how did this guy slip through that system? And
well, he's also pretty well connected.
Because
this is where his money comes from. Is his parents are rich. His dad was a partner at a major law firm,
high power law firm,
and his mother was rich as well. They didn't really get into where her money came from, but
that's what I wanted to know. I was like, who was this guy's mother that when he dies, just leaves him a truckload of money? Which
and
is where we find out.
All of his expenses are covered in this trust through the law firm. Yep. So he has no expenses. He's got a massive amount of money on hand to just produce tickling videos.
Yep. I remember from the documentary, he gets $30,000 a month as living expenses out of a trust his father left him. And then
he has like a penthouse apartment and, you know, mm-hmm. it's
New York City.
He lives a pretty lavish life for free and just sits around hacking and tormenting people online.
That's all he seems to do. He lives this weird proxy and he's got his personas, Terry and Jane and Debbie, and it's so bizarre. And he always chooses these female personas, which is so interesting in his psychology. This guy is really interesting. We don't get to learn much about him as a person, other than everybody that these documentary filmmakers talk to say, don't mess with this guy.
Just I feel like the female aliases maybe makes the most sense in terms of his psychology, because like women are disarming and women can, you know, have these conversations and no one's going to think twice about it. So I feel like he adopts women personalities because...
I think he did it to hide from his own sexuality, right? If he's online as Terry Tickle looking and his photo on his page is this woman and is looking for tickling videos, it's not gay. It's a woman looking for these videos. It's just her kink. That seems to be okay. It's not gay. Cause that seems to be his thing. He cannot be perceived as a homosexual man.
Which, and of course, you know, anyone who's this homophobic is just gay as the day is long. I mean, and it's, in that respect, I really feel bad for David because he was never able to be himself. He was never comfortable being himself. And like, it comes from his father. There's a conversation with his stepmother about how his dad would have been upset if he was gay. So he just never felt safe to just be out and be into tickling and be happy.
And I'm wondering if that's where David just really pissed him off. Like the David Farrier, the director.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Because we find out that David is bisexual, but he's
living with a man.
He was living with a man at the time. And I think that just was like the trigger. Like he'd been somehow felt out, like, oh no, I'm not that David had sensed his gayness, and so now he had to like destroy them to prove that he wasn't gay.
Yeah, because David Farrier gets to be out and happy and successful.
He's living his best life, and this guy's hidden himself away like some kind of spider at the center of a web, miserable and alone, just looking at tickling videos and destroying people's lives. It's interesting
really
to think of them
sad.
As opposites.
It's a really sad story.
Right. If this guy wasn't
for
such
this
a
sexual
piece of
predator.
Shit.
Yeah, if he wasn't such garbage, I mean, fuck.
I know. Oh, it's interesting to put those two, and they never really, I think, make that connection. This is where in some places I was like, oh man, the documentary could have kind of made those connections, because I felt like it was put there, but never really brought up. You know, like, why go after David?
Probably
so long?
It's unethical to like speculate, and it's unethical to even like talk to a psychologist who's never met David D'Amato to like speculate about his, because they talk about in the follow up documentary that, you know, it's so the greatest challenge of making this movie is doing a profile of someone who does not want to be found, who does not want to be the subject of your documentary. And had he been willing to participate and had these discussions and, you know, been evaluated in some way, it might have helped connect some of these tissues.
Yeah, it is so interesting that the only way they found him was just through an accident, that when he changed web hosts, it happened that there was all this financial information that really gave a lot of the game away, like that David D'Amato had hired private investigators in New Zealand and in the U.S. to follow these two around. That they were like being surveilled the whole time. And just the level of paranoia this guy lived with was just ridiculous.
Yeah, and then he did actually go to prison for a little while.
Oh, yes. Well, we did talk about that cyber criming he did a little bit.
Yeah, what was the actual charge? Was it just like computer fraud or something?
Yeah,
like two counts
yeah it was two counts of computer fraud.
For stealing was it stealing the Social Security numbers?
No, it was using the kids' credentials to crash the school computers.
Okay, so that's what it was.
And
but no mention of tickling, like tormenting people.
Nope, ruining the kids' life. Yeah, or blackmail, the threats.
No charges ever come from that.
Well, and it's because of his father. It was absolutely due to his father interjected into that. And I'm sure that his father knew the judge because the the sentence he got for the
it was like house arrest at first.
It was for the two counts of cybercrime were house arrest, and he had to go finish his law degree.
And the one journalist is like, yeah, because this is the guy you want being a lawyer.
Yep. And he had to go finish his law degree, which I think when the school found out that he was on probation, I think booted him. So then he went to jail for 6 months, which is what we find out, you know, when Terry Tickle is sending David Starr these messages like, oh, I'm in the hospital. As soon as
that came up, I was like, okay, there's a reason. There's another reason why Terry can't come to the computer.
Right. Not just in the hospital for mono for 6 months. Oh,
I'm so sick.
Yeah.
Please, can you keep making Tickle videos? I promise everyone will get paid when I'm out of bed because I'm so sick. I was like, this is sketch as fuck. Right. Something
and
is happening.
And you're writing these handwritten notes?
Yeah.
Come on. Because that's what they don't allow you a computer or a typewriter in prison to send your notes with, right? I guess. Oh man.
I don't know. I guess not.
I don't know. But it was wild. And yeah, so that was it. That was the one time he faced any consequences for his shitty behavior. And that's
for just a lifetime of garbage.
That's where I also thought there was this unpicked up component of like privilege. He lived a life of absolute privilege.
Yes.
And he could have done anything.
Coming from that background and with his resources, you're right. He could have done anything.
He could have done anything. Anything. And he chose to make Tickle videos and ruin people's lives.
And it's not so much the fetish. Like, I'm not here to yuck anyone's yum. Tickling doesn't do it for me. I don't find it erotic. I hate it when I'm tickled. But it's the manipulation. It's the attacks.
It's the taking of somebody's control without consent. That's what that's the real fetish. Let's just say that's...
Yeah.
The tickling is just the wrapper. The real meat of the thing that he likes is when somebody lacks control and they're forced to be his puppet, basically.
Many people that get off on giving up control.
It's right. Like, that, in a
that's,
healthy,
an, that's another thing you can find, too.
In a healthy S&M relationship, yes. There is a give and a take that's supposed to be part of that world. And that's not what this guy D'Amato wanted. He wanted all take, and there was no. He didn't want the consent. I think he relished in the destructive component when they actively said, "I want out." When they used, we'll say, a safe word and metaphor as like, you know, take these off the internet. Then it was like, yes, now the real pleasure comes.
Yeah, because I don't know. You almost have to assume like he couldn't imagine anyone else being consensually into this, so he had to go through these terrible back channels to get what he wanted.
I think you still need to just view it all through the lens of his repressed sexuality. He has to give it a veneer of acceptability. This is professional. This is a competition, endurance tickling. Or with the MMA thing, this is a serious delving into, is tickling a good MMA strategy? You know, then it has this veneer of legitimacy. It's not homosexual. It's not, you know, degenerate. It's something else, I guess. That's all he needs. The context just needs to be something else, not homoerotic, when you watch this video, I recommend just kicking that thing on and be like, oh yeah, that's super gay. I don't know how else to phrase it. It's these beautiful boys sitting on top of each other, touching each other. The product speaks for itself.
Absolutely. And then, like, the last thing I wanted to mention was that how elaborate the fake lawsuits were.
Oh my God, that was crazy. Again, this comes into the privilege element of it, where he could put this up. He had the money to make some legitimate complaints, but he's such a bullshit artist.
There's like one legitimate cease and desist letter from an attorney, and then everything else is manufactured.
Yes.
Which must be manufactured like perfectly. And I, you know, he works in the legal field. Like, he did end up becoming a lawyer, getting his law degree.
Yep, he got a law degree. He was never, we find out he was never a licensed attorney.
So he has these skills to manufacture these lawsuits
and
in this other
legitimate
lawyer's name.
Yep.
Yeah, it all sounds legitimate. It all looks legitimate. It fools everyone who looks at it. Even the like the lawyer whose name is on the lawsuits, they go and meet with him. Is like, yeah, I keep getting these lawsuits from you. He's like, I didn't send any of these.
Yeah, that was the thing, right? Because one of the last things that they go to New York, they actually stake out David's D'Amato's apartment for a while, get a real brief kind of, not even interview, but just back and forth with him.
Yeah, just like more legal threats.
Right, right. I'm going
like,
to sue you. You're not
allowed to do
here.
This.
You can't film
you're
me
here,
out here.
You're here on a tourist video.
Visa. You're on a tourist visa. It's like, no, we're on
like,
a journalist
no,
visa.
I'm journalist visa. Everything's square as far as my making a documentary. It's like, yeah, we'll see about that in court kind of stuff.
Yep, yep. And then they just stop by the lawyer on the way out. I felt like that was like a, well, I guess we'll just go see the lawyer while we're here. And then the lawyer was like,
can clarify any of this.
Yeah, and the lawyer was like, what do you mean? I sent you the first one, but I haven't sent you anything else. And like, well, here's all these other documents that have come out of your office. In fact, wasn't one of the, I think one of the Jane O'Brien media outlets used his address as well.
It was Jane O'Brien's headquarters was this lawyer's office. Yeah.
And he was like, I don't know anything about that. And he was very taken aback.
Yeah.
That he'd been pulled into this as well. And so then they realized that all the lawsuits, all the legal threats were bullshit. They just evaporated at that point. And I think it's that moment that these two, Dylan and David really saw D'Amato for what he was, that there was nothing to what he had nothing on them. So
yeah,
he
couldn't, exactly.
All it was all threat. I think the last thing they did was they got his stepmother on the phone. They called her up.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And she kind of laid out some of his early childhood that things had not been apparently very good at home. And he'd always been kind of a bullied, picked on kid, and then became, of course, a monster himself. And oh, man. Yeah. Oh, what a mess. And what a mess
never,
of a person.
Never had a girlfriend. Never had a boyfriend. They didn't know if he was asexual or homosexual or what was going on with him, because he would just, he could never be himself.
Right. Exactly. And I think he was, yeah. He's so repressed that he could not be himself ever. And I don't know if you could use that to explain why he was a shitty human being, or maybe he was always going to be a shitty, privileged, spoiled brat of a human being. But yeah, it was so weirdly wrapped up in this with this person at the center. It's so hard to explain, right? Because at the end of it, you're like, oh, it's just this weird guy's fetish. He was doing all of this, paying people tens of thousands of dollars for this weird fetish and to deny that it was a fetish.
Yeah, just good old-fashioned tickle fun.
Yep, he flew his three cronies out to New Zealand. That's not a little flight. It's like 24 hours of flying to get to New Zealand to just threaten these two maybe documentary filmmakers at the time.
It's like that's power I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
That is having literally endless resources if you could do that on a whim.
Right. And to produce hundreds of videos, make no money off of them, just for the sheer sport of ruining people's lives.
It's fucked up.
Man.
Which, it takes us to the little follow-up documentary, The Tickle King.
Yes. And if you watch Tickle, stop now. Go find The Tickle King.
On YouTube.
It's on YouTube. It's free. It's 20 minutes. Wherever. So, you know, you've invested this much of your time.
It's real short.
Go finish it out.
And The Tickle King is basically the story of Tickled premiering at various film festivals. And the story just getting weirder.
It just gets weirder because, he cannot be perceived as, you know, having this interesting fetish, this kind of odd kink. And he puts they do a Dateline special, kind of like, oh, this Tickled documentary is coming out. There's that guy. What's his name? Joe?
Kevin?
Kevin. The guy
Kevin
who
Clark.
Threatened the filmmakers in New Zealand. There he is on Dateline giving an interview about how David Ferrier and Dylan Reeve are just these bullshit artists who are trying to destroy he won't even admit that he knows David D'Amato. He's just saying, trying to ruin Jane O'Brien media with their slanderous things. And the Dateline guy actually asked, like, so do you know who Dylan D'Amato is? He's like, I can't say that I know who that is or if I've ever worked for them. And it just, you know, came off as such bullshit. Even the Dateline guy was like, yeah, okay.
What was wild to me was that Kevin interviewed the Muskegon guy. Yes. And the Muskegon guy, like, was like, yeah, they took everything I said out of context.
They smoked weed with me.
Yeah, they were all on drugs.
Well, that felt like, you know, they used their same tactic. We're going to sue you for slander and defamation.
They might have scared him into that, yeah.
And we're going to ruin you if you don't get out there right now and recant everything you just said on that film.
The only way out is to turn on these guys.
Yep. And on
film with me right now.
And that guy had nothing. I mean, nothing. He's from horrible part of Michigan that has no money, and it's just terrible.
They have two parks for the price of one, Johnny. I assume it's still there. I guess I haven't been in years.
I don't know. You're not talking about Deer Forest, are you?
No.
Oh, good.
Michigan's Adventure.
Michigan Adventure is still there. It's still there. Yeah, the water park and the theme park.
Okay. The water park's really what you go for.
It is. It's actually a nice water park. But yeah.
Yeah, it's a real sweet water park up in Muskegon, Michigan.
So if you have a chance, listeners, go over there. But stay in the nice parts.
And, you know, maybe participate in some tickling.
You might find a tickle recruiter. And this is where, the recruiter out of Michigan is like, yeah, they've got people everywhere. You know, I'm a recruiter here. I make money. I just get money to bring people into these tickle videos. I get, you know, like a bounty, like a headhunting fee on them. And he's making a good life doing it. He's like, you know, they've got people everywhere. You know, they fly in people in from Europe to do these tickle videos. He's got recruiters. I'm not the only
one. They're like Hydra.
It's like stupid Hydra.
Stupid Hydra.
It is. Yeah. Like, he's everywhere. He's got this reach, and all he does with it is just shit it away for ruining people. That seems to be the whole point of this entire empire, is to have blackmail material on young men and just fucking ruin them when he feels like it. That's what's bizarre about this whole thing.
Yeah, and so they're like showing the film at Cannes or Sundance or, you know, these various things, and Kevin shows up.
Yes.
And buys out screenings, and they hire private investigators.
Yes, they find, because that's one of the first things they get an inkling that's kind of weird, is there's, you know, somebody's got a holding a cup weird. It's one of the patrons at the film festival, you know, recording, a secret recording. Somebody's making a secret recording.
Or they think so, but they couldn't find it.
They couldn't find it. Yeah, the security comes in and kind of searches things, but it's an empty cup. So, and they're like, yeah, we can just ask him to leave. That's the best we can do. So
they were worried about violence. So there's like extra security around it. All this.
Right. Because of all the threats people are safe. And to that point, even though he's got him cold, he's got the financials, David and Dylan, they've got it all. But still at this point, Jane O'Brien Media and David D'Amato are trying to pretend they're separate entities. And that Kevin works for Jane O'Brien Media. He doesn't work for D'Amato. I don't know that I work for him. I've never heard of the name. You know, he's playing as stupid as he can. This is where we're saying he just takes money and does whatever. He has zero morals in this.
He's fairly soulless, yes.
Yes. And you see him and you're like, this guy is soulless and just does whatever for money.
Yeah, this is what a person looks like when they are void of soul, yes.
It's so, yeah.
If you had to imagine someone who had no soul, that's what Kevin Clark looks like.
Just Google it, you'll be like, oh. Or by now, since you've stopped and watched the video,
since you've watched Tickled, you know. You've seen it.
You did your due diligence and saw, and you're like, oh yeah, oof. And but, at that point, they're still trying to pretend to be different entities.
Yeah.
Which is bizarre to me, because they've got the records. They literally have the paperwork.
They have documentation, yes. Just deny, deny, deny.
And that seems, you know, we've seen that lately in our politics, right? Even if you're caught with your pants down, my pants aren't down. What are you talking about? Your pants are down. It's like,
my pants are always down.
Right. I don't know about
my pants come like this.
Yeah. This is what pants look like.
I don't know
like.
Anything about pants.
Who even brought up pants? You're the pervert for talking about pants. Because at one point, like, as the screenings go on, because they split up release, right? Because
when it comes to America.
Yeah, they get real sued this time. After they show it at, I think, Sundance and one other place, as they kind of go.
Yeah, there's like a libel suit or something. Yep, things they said are not true, and here's a real lawsuit.
Yep, and so they were, and the two even responded to it like, oh, it's finally nice to get a real legal lawsuit and not like a fake one like we've been getting.
And I think even by the end of Tickle King, those lawsuits
they're dismissed as well. Yeah, they got immediately dismissed. Because they had no grounds, right? You know, what did they make up about this guy? It's all literally right there, right? So yeah,
the insane cherry on the insane sundae of this whole thing is that when the film premieres in Los Angeles,
yep, here comes the two split up. So Dylan, yeah. he was originally the co-director, the computer guy. He goes to Los Angeles. David goes to
New York for the first screening, yeah. And David goes to a screening in New York for like Q&As and, you know, to interact with the audience. And they spent a movie trying to figure out who David D'Amato is and sit down with him and have a chat with him. And then he comes to the Los Angeles screening.
Yes, he shows the fuck up.
He shows up, watches the whole movie, and then participates in the Q&A.
No, that's not even what's crazier to me as I was watching it. He shows up with the private investigator who they had kicked out of the original place.
Or Missouri, I think.
Yep, and who had said he didn't work for David D'Amato either.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't know who that is. I don't work for that. He shows up with him, and Kevin is there. The man who apparently had no idea who David D'Amato was and didn't work for him is also there. Do you keep track of your lies, or do you just throw them out there I've been saying I don't know who he is, but here I am clearly working for him.
But him showing up at all was just insane to me. It's like, yeah, guess who's here?
Yes, and just
the audience.
The act that he puts on, I think he's genuinely confused why Dylan, who is the family man, who has a wife and kids and gets in his, is genuinely confused why he would work with David Ferrier.
Yeah.
Because the questions he asks are just like, he's a pervert. Why do you work with him? I don't understand. You're a family man. I get you. But why David? Why are you standing up for him?
I know there's good in you, Dylan. I can see it. You're a family man. Why are you working with this perverted monster?
Yes. Like, that's his view of people who are homosexual. I think that what we saw there was his real view of what he thinks is like to be gay and why he cannot own that himself. Oh, man. That was so bizarre because they're doing a Q&A and he's literally just sitting in the audience.
Yeah, like he's invited to come up and take questions and ask Dylan whatever he wants and they can have and he's like, no, I just want to sit here as an audience member and hurl questions at you.
Yep. And then, like, you know, but at one point the audience is booing him because they ask, you know, like, because he's like, this was all, you know, he gives a D'Amato speech a little bit, says, this is all made up. This was garbage. This said, this was nothing about real life. And he asks, you know, and then Dylan asks, like, did it look like we were trying to destroy this man, David D'Amato? And the audience basically, you know, says, you know, no. And they start booing D'Amato. And he's like, no, don't boo him. Don't boo him. You know, we want to hear what he has to say. D'Amato still tries the legal threats, and it's so weird how he does it in such a chummy way.
Yeah, it's his default setting. It's like right away, it seems to solve most of his problems for him. If he threatens legal action, he knows people are going to shut up and fall in line.
Because,
like, I imagine that happens most of the time.
I can't. It must work because he starts out with that when he's like, "You can't film me in here." You know, it's a federal crime. And apparently, in between when making this film, Dylan has picked up a law degree because he's like, no, that's a civil infraction. And we have permission from the owners to film inside. He's like, well, I'm not getting
I imagine if you're getting this many lawsuits, faulty or not, you start to learn a thing or two about what is legal. And
right. And he's like, well, you know, I'm going to get a lawyer and we'll see about, you know, I'm a lawyer. We'll do that. And he's like, you are not allowed to practice law in California. That's so he's like, goes after him. He's like, well, I'm a lawyer, I'm gonna sue you. He's like, you're not on the bar in any place I've found, and we've looked,
we can't find any record of you being a barred lawyer.
Yep. You have a law degree, yes, but you are not you cannot file lawsuits, you're not a lawyer in the functional sense. And so and that's so interesting to take him on like that. But then he's like in the audience, like, you need to get a good lawyer. I'm really concerned for you, Dylan. I'm very, very concerned. You need a good lawyer because what's coming at you? You know, you're oof.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it works most of the time. But at this point, they're like, whatever, dude, bring it.
Well, and then you won't get this from the documentaries, but David D'Amato is dead.
He died. And I was so surprised.
He died shortly after Tickle King came
I
out.
Wanted to see something come of this. Something like, you know, like, because this guy had social security numbers from dead people, that he had credit cards, so there's financial fraud in there. Even if he's paying the bills on the credit cards, which he can afford. The harassment, just the, you know, something. Nope. He got to live his life You know, without 6 months in jail was what he got out of all the terrible things he did.
And he dies of a heart attack.
Yep.
Poison heart.
And
pumping that black goo through his veins.
It just must be real hard on his heart. Because the filmmakers did release a statement saying, you know, like, we're very sorry. You know, we didn't wish him any will. Because apparently they'd gotten a lot of things on Twitter about after this movie came out. They got a pretty strong Twitter following around Tickled. And there was a lot of speculation in their Twitter followers that D'Amato wasn't dead. That he had just
faked his death. It's like conspiracy theories. Like, no, he's dead. Like, we have the death certificate. It's like, if you believe the stuff we covered in the documentary, you trust us as researchers, trust us, David is dead.
He died. We wish him no ill will. But here's what I discovered, just kind of, you know, reading along with this, that he had also sued his stepmother for defamation to the tune of $40 million. And
I don't know if what came about.
I don't know either, but it was still ongoing even after his death, which I thought
was... I was going to say, he might have died before then.
Oh, it doesn't matter. It's still going.
Yeah.
Because the executor of the estate in New York can continue on legal action for, like, defamation things against an estate.
That's right.
So she was still on the hook for that. And I was like, oh, this poor old woman. Even in death,
all
he was
she
still
did,
a dick.
All she did was a little interview, and by all accounts did not say anything untrue.
Nope. Here it is. I'm looking at it. $40 million defamation and slander lawsuit for statements in the film that injure his business and causing mental distress.
Yeah, mental distress.
Right. And that's what this guy's MO was. That's what's interesting, is that he would sue under that. And that's his MO. That's what he loves to do to people.
Yeah, if you can't take it, don't dish it out, David.
Oh, my God. I found out that he died at 55, and I was like, that is a rough-looking 55.
Yeah, he looked real old.
I thought he was in his 60s. Because when they catch him in New York and just you get to see him for a second, you're like, oh, man, this guy is, like, old and creepy-looking. He was in his early 50s when they made it.
He must have been, like, 52 at that point, yeah.
and that means when he was doing his creepy assistant principal thing, I was doing the numbers, he was in his late 20s. He was in his late 20s in the 90s when he was doing his creepy assistant principal act. I was like, you gross garbage person. And I'm sure, again, his father probably had enough lawyers to get him out of any issues that the school was going to throw at him.
Oh, that's a good point, too, was like, you know, you can't fire him. You can, like, relocate him, but there's not going to be any record of this. And if you accuse him of these things, we're coming for you.
We will crush your school, and you will be bogged down in litigation forever.
There is a good chance that stuff was going on. Yeah,
I'm sure that's what seems to have worked with this guy. His dad must have been the father from Clueless. You know, who's always suing everybody and is destroying people's lives, and you're like, oh, he's a real piece of garbage.
Sounds about right. That sounds like the brand, the D'Amato brand.
It does, and D'Amato learned it from somewhere, right? It works, but I'm sure his dad was the same way. I will sue you, and I'll take you to court. I'll destroy your life. And that seems to be what law was for him, was a means of destroying people.
Yeah.
Which was his fetish. Oof. This was a ride, man. This was a real crazy ride.
It's such a trip. It's one of the craziest movies I've ever seen. It's so wild.
This is where I wanted more out of this, or a follow-up to this, to just talk about how this guy was able to get away with this for so long and the systems in place that protected him. That was one of the interesting takeaways I saw in this that I don't think was really addressed, was he lived his life basically how he wanted. No repercussions for any of the things he did. Other than...
Yeah.
He was embarrassed by two New Zealander documentary filmmakers.
And you mentioned earlier, it's just privilege.
He's in a
position of privilege and power, and he's untouchable.
His father knew judges and was able to get him out of things that normally should have been a game over in his life for anybody else. And he just walked off basically with a minimum sentence of 6 months in prison. That's the only thing that ever happened to him that was, which is sad. But the Tickled videos live on.
I'm researching. They're still making Tickled videos.
Yeah, that's the spoilers. They're still doing the Tickled videos, even though he's dead.
Yeah, like Jane O'Brien Media still exists and still is doing it.
It seems like because there was a middleman in all of this that David and Dylan didn't talk about. Like, he wasn't interesting enough, and they never got an interview with him. But there was another middleman between Kevin and the I can't remember the other two cronies' names. They're worthless to talk about. Skeezy and Slimy. I don't know.
Smiley. The one guy was kind of nice. Yeah. The one guy was, I can't remember his name, but he was pretty nice.
And this guy actually has reinvigorated the brand of Jane O'Brien Media and is trying to make money off of it.
Okay.
So he,
like, actually doing fetish stuff.
He is taking the Tickle videos and re-releasing. He's actually selling them. Oh,
yes,
I remember
in the materials reading about this. Yes, yeah. Jane O'Brien is now for profit, and he's got, like, a Twitter where he's talking about, like, hey, we just cracked open this
hard drive.
Lots of fun stuff on it.
Can't wait to get coming that out soon. There. Yep. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, I remember all this now, from the article.
Oh, so to think, like, if you were one of these Tickle people, to be like, oh, he's finally dead. It's finally over. And you're like, oh, it's not over. But at least it'll be behind a paywall.
Yeah, you got to pay for it.
Right. And so it's not going to be about vindictive destruction. It's at least behind a paywall.
Yeah, that's something, I guess. I mean, it's still illegal use of, I don't know. There doesn't seem to be any mention of, like, a contract.
I assume they sign a release. That's probably what David Starr brought into it. Is this professionalism that you sign a release and we get the video, we get the image, we get to do what we want with it. But they're told that's the lie, right? This is that it's just for personal consumption of one Terry Tickle.
But well, we're running a little long on time. Do you want to do a segment?
Sure. What's that? What do we do with the segment here?
I call it Doc Stars.
Doc Stars.
And this is if they were to make a Tickled movie, like a Hollywood Tickled movie of this story, who would we cast to play these different roles?
Oh boy. Who would we cast? All right, so we've got D'Amato, right? But he's got to be our last reveal.
Yeah,
so that's got to be
some big cameo,
something
so
big.
You got D'Amato, you got David Farrier, you got Dylan.
All right, David Farrier,
you got TJ.
So easy to cast. John Oliver.
He would be really good.
He would be really good. He's got the look, what David Farrier kind of looks like already.
I was thinking Taika Waititi.
Ooh, okay.
Because he's already a New Zealander.
He's a New Zealander, so
he's a chameleon.
Wouldn't have to fake the accent. Oh, that's a good choice. I like him. I've been watching What We Do in the Shadows, which he directs. It's amazing.
Yeah, I need to see more of the TV series because I watched a couple episodes and it's so great, but I haven't watched
I'll
more.
Make that plug right now. Plug right now. Ba-bam! Who would I cast?
I also started watching his new series on Hulu. Ooh. And that's really good too, but I haven't watched much of it.
Who would we cast as Dylan?
If Jonah Hill could put on some weight for it.
He'd be a good one.
I'd say Jonah Hill.
Yeah, because David was definitely the face of the documentary. And Dylan is not on camera much. You hear him in his voice where they're kind of staking out. But yeah, he's not on camera as much. So you need a good voice and somebody who's not as handsome as John Oliver to kind of, butt up against that.
Right. Oh. And they would give him like the facial hair and grease his hair and he'd look right.
Now, Kevin, I would totally cast as, it would either be Wayne Knight.
Wayne Knight's a good one.
He's a good
like
one.
That.
And there's another guy. I got to remember. There's another actor who I think would be really good, but he'd be too old for it. So let's just go Wayne Knight.
Yeah, Wayne Knight's good. Yeah, Kevin's rough. Yeah, I think Wayne Knight's a really good call because he's got to be looking his age by now. I haven't seen him anything recently, but he's got to be looking kind of.
I think he could play that soulless
Kevin Clarkey. Yeah,
soulless character and who has like no charisma, but he's just gonna put it all out there anyway. And then all right, who's the big one? Who's D'Amato gonna be? Or I mean, we could cast some of the minor characters like the pornographer and the tickle enthusiast.
Oh, the Florida.
Yeah, who would
guy?
We cast as the tick? I think that'd be a good cameo for like Matt Damon.
Matt Damon would be really good, or like Stanley Tucci.
Oh my gosh, I'm gonna say Alan Tudyk would also be a great one.
Oh, for sure.
He could do something weird like that. I think he.
What about TJ? Who would you cast as TJ?
TJ, man, somebody younger. Oh yeah, like the put the Tickle video together. Who would be like a bunch of the Tickle kids in there? I mean, Ben Affleck's too old. But he has that kind of skeezy, Ben Affleck's brother's too skeezy, but kind of probably perfect for it.
I'm trying to.
He is that person.
Trying to think of like younger actors.
Yeah, I'm trying to think so too. Like, younger, who like, could play a like, rougher look.
Like maybe Tom Holland, you could throw in there as a TJ.
Yeah, he's still too high powered for that part, but he could kick it up.
Yeah.
You know, as I'm looking at a picture of Dylan Reeve right now, you know, Johnny Blaze could do a really good Dylan Reeve.
Yeah.
It's the right look.
Johnny, for sure. Yeah.
Oh, did you know David D'Amato has a picture for IMDb?
No.
Oh, you should look at it. I'll let you take a moment and look this up.
It's fucking hilarious.
It's everything you'd want from David D'Amato.
This doesn't show him having a picture.
Oh, really? Because if you just search Tickle documentary into Google, it pops up with a cast list, and he's got a picture associated with his name.
No. What is that?
I don't know, man.
That guy fucks. He's
like a Jason Statham looking guy.
I know who I would cast as that guy. Is the bad guy from Ant-Man.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Like, that's what he looks like. Is that kind of like tall, slender, bald Lex Luthor motherfucker.
Yep. And it's Lex Luthor's a pretty good, I think, analogy to give this guy. So maybe not bad.
Yeah, there's no way that's a young picture of David D'Amato.
No, there's no way. There's no way.
There's zero chance. This might be the new guy running Jane O'Brien, the like new middleman.
Yeah, I know. I think they just put a picture of him up. And nobody's questioned it. Done a reverse.
Oh, Marco was smiley. Marco was the nice guy.
Yeah, okay, there they are, yep. As I'm looking at a picture of TJ in the Tickle video, as it were, Steve-O's too old from Jackass, but that's his look.
Oh, but he does have a Steve-O look.
That Steve-O. So you need to cast somebody with that Steve-O look who does dumb shit for money. And everybody's like, I'm sure nobody's surprised that TJ did a Tickle video. They're like, yeah, TJ's a dumb shit. Of course he would do a Tickle video for money. And then fuck around and find out and be like, oh, now it's on the internet forever?
I know 100% who I'd want to play David D'Amato.
Okay, give it to me. Because
it's maybe not the big name cameo you're looking for, but there's an actor named Paul Walter Hauser.
I'm going to look him up here.
Who would be a perfect David D'Amato. He was like the manager guy in I, Tonya.
Oh, the, like, yep.
Big personal security guy in I, Tonya.
I would also take Patton Oswalt.
Patton Oswalt would be a really good one to like have a cameo where he shows up as David D'Amato.
Yep.
But as soon as I was thinking about this segment earlier, I was like, because I was just watching Cruella today.
Oh, how was that?
And this guy, it's actually really good.
All right.
It's too long, but it's pretty good. But he plays Horace in Cruella as one of her like sidekick henchmen partner guys. And he's terrific. He's basically doing a Bob Hoskins impersonation. And I was like, if this guy's not doing a Bob Hoskins biopic right now, I don't know what we're doing in this world, because he's doing a fantastic Bob Hoskins.
Maybe that's what he's prepping for his next role. It's just kind of bleeding in.
I think he's got to be auditioning for a Bob Hoskins.
He's just doing it right out there. People are going to see this and be like, we should be doing a Bob Hoskins.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Oh, man. Okay, I think we got this cast. Everybody else we can fill in with kind of little people here and there, just the extras. But I think we got the mains in there.
Yep, we did it. It was a good time. I like that segment.
I'll watch that movie.
I got to think at some point they'll make it. Like, it's such a wild story. Who doesn't want to see that movie?
Oh, man, yeah. It is. Because there's no happy ending to it?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, he dies. It's kind of happy.
At 55 of a heart attack with complications of diabetes. No surprise.
Well, Johnny, is there anything you'd like to plug or recommend?
Oh, man. You know, we've kind of been peppering him in here and there. What We Do in the Shadows, that's a must. It's just hilarious.
Yeah, I've really got to watch that.
Yeah. Other than that, I haven't been watching too much lately. Mostly I've just been get back in the groove of being in-person teaching again, which I feel like I've forgotten how to do.
Yeah, it's been an adjustment. Because I've been doing this like high flex approach where, you know, I record my lectures and put them online and students can attend via Zoom if they want to or need to. So it's like,
that's how I did mine too. Trying to make
everything as accessible as possible. It's going pretty well, but it's a lot to juggle and adapt to.
Yeah, I've tried to kind of blend things, but, you know, having people it there right at the moment, I'm like, they'll talk to me. So I'll figure it out. But that's what I've been kind of doing, is just getting back into being in person again.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, and I've got a bit of a commute to where I teach. So it's eating up a bit of my time again. I didn't miss. So, yeah. So watch What We Do in the Shadows. Always watch Steven Universe. Cinemuck, I always will put out there. Well, you're already behind the paywall, right? Dock and Roll is behind the paywall. Go watch.
No.
It's not?
No.
Oh, nice. Go this be a patron public. Of Word Salad. Plenty of other shows. I love Cinemuck, so get in on it.
Cool. I want to recommend, we're recording on September 11th, so I threw up the new Michael Keaton September 11th movie called Worth on Netflix. Hmm. And it's about like the lawyer whose job it was to figure out how to compensate the families of the victims of 9/11.
Ooh, boy, that's got to be a rough job. That's things are sticking with you forever.
It's a really fascinating story. It's like on paper, it might sound like kind of a boring premise, but it has kind of a Adam McKay, Aaron Sorkin-esque energy to it that's really powerful, and you get a lot of like real stories.
I say, that's the thing. In every payout, victims, there's a human tragedy in every payout.
Yeah,
you're like,
so you're talking about like 7,000 people they had to like interview and, you know, figure out all this stuff. And Keaton gives a fantastic performance. And I'm not quite done with it. I'm almost finished, but I recommend it. It's worth it. I was like choked up the entire time.
Oh,
I was like,
man.
Because you get these stories that, oh, it's rough.
It's got to be
but
rough.
It's good. It's real good.
Oh, I am going to throw out another recommendation. Ted Lasso. So if you've got Apple Plus, Ted Lasso.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about Ted Lasso, really, but I don't have Apple Plus, so when it hits video or something, I'll check it out.
All right, cool.
Cool. Well, that's going to be it from us. You can follow us on Twitter at Word Salad Radio. You can join the Word Salad Radio Heads Facebook group. As Johnny said, you can join patreon.com/wordsalad to support us and CadaverCast and get access to exclusive content and early content. Or you can write us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. So, Johnny, thanks for coming on and going on this weird journey with me.
If you've got any other weird kind of kinky, fetishy things, I'll watch it. You don't got to trick me into it, Joe.
I mean, there's some pretty good porn docs that get into kinky, fetishy stuff.
You know, I'll recommend one if you want to do one for another time. It's called Guys and Dolls. A little dated now.
Oh, you've mentioned this to me, and I have not checked it out. Yeah,
yeah, it's in a multi-parts on YouTube if you want to get a...
Yeah, I do want to check it out.
Deep dive into some weird stuff.
Excellent, excellent. Gonna get kinky.
Yes! I'm so excited.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Rock out with your doc out. Ooh.